This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This is your typical radio ad while eating a Crunch Bar.
This is Automatic of Otto's Used Cars. This weekend only, we're having a whale! Bring the kids. See for yourself. It is huge. Gonna make a big splash. No other dealer can say they have a whale like this.
When things sound dull, turn up the fun with Crunch.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off, or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs, and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Hollywood, California. And the world-famous Meltdown Comics. And the even more famous Meltdown Theater. Where the vodka and ice are brought with great elan. Harmontown is in session one more time. Welcome to the stage, the mayor of Harmontown, Mr. Dan Harmon.
I watched season four.
Shake, Sinora, shake it all the time. Work, 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 Sinora.
I guess I already knew this, but apparently I'm quite a genius.
Not a fan?
I think I feel pretty comfortable expressing any kind of like not my cup of tea about it, because this has been expressed 1,000 times over. It's obviously not somebody doing what they do and trying really hard to make people happy. It is very much like an impression. And an unflattering one. Like, it's just 13 episodes. I'm Dan Harmon. Die Hard. I feel like I'm going back to work tomorrow morning, and I just feel like, do I talk like that? What am I? And it's weird to think about the fork in the road before one in this situation, a situation which is very, very unique. Because if you, the weird thing that keeps eating at me is there's a system in place that's winning, because I would have had too much leverage, too much power, too much salary, as would have a lot of writers coming into season four. So they just flushed us, replaced us with two guys, didn't know what they were getting into, went to Comic-Con, saw what was going on. People dressed as spacemen and bananas and shit, and going, holy shit, I cut myself every night and watch Community. And they went, fuck. And then I think, you know, they tried their best to, and I think that is... what I think that was the best idea, or not the best idea, as it turns out, but the most admirable kind of impulse. It was like, let's not let these people down. If there's anything else we do, let's not let these people down. And And so now you go back, and I go, okay, well, watching that season, it's like I have such an impulse to just do, like, the show that they probably got hired to do. Like they could have just done, like, a sitcom set at a community college, and people would have, over time, people would have gone, like, what about paintball? What the fuck? What about the chicken fingers? But then 5 episodes later, like, regular people would have been like, oh, this is a pleasant little show set at a community college, and they would have beaten me. They would have, like, the system would have won. I would have just crawled under a bridge and pooped in a bucket, like, just died. And which is my worst nightmare. That's why I came to LA, is because that's how I felt in high school. That's how I felt in my parents' house. I just felt, you know, I tried. My whole life is just me trying to get people to stop going, ugh, gross. I'm just trying to trick them into liking me. It's just like, well, look, Joel McHale's saying something funny, and the surprise is me. But the weird thing is, like, so it's like, yeah, you go back, it's like, it's not right, like, writers fighting other writers is the fucking American dream in the eyes of Sony. That is what they want. They want creative people rewriting each other. They want creative people replacing each other. They want us interchangeable. They want to think about writing the way they think about the guy on Assembly Line 24 that puts the final screw in the fucking PlayStation. Like, they want to think about us all that way. And I shouldn't even say they, because it's an it. It's a fucking machine. There's not a single person that works at that corporation that isn't also thought of like that by the fucking Skynet. Like all of them. Even the people that you go, oh, that douchebag, that fucking idiot, that vice president of fucking what's-it, head up his ass, dick shit, fucking fuckface, international. I can't wait for him to get fired. They're just going to replace him with someone else. Some other fucking prep school frat ass fucking dipshit. The system just wants us all just fucking not being human. It's just like, they accidentally, you know, in the quest for to recoup their investment, they made a TV show that with a bunch of actors that make people really happy. And we got 13 more episodes, and I like the idea that we've laced the opiate with just a little bit of activation, a little bit of humanity, and like when you watch that show, maybe you'll go out and make a show of your own or something like that.
Do you feel pretty confident in your ability to go in there and slam dunk this next season?
No, I don't feel confident in my ability to slam dunk anything, because I'll measure the, you know, slam dunking by my own standards, so the basket's always going to be 1 inch higher than I can jump, because I have a weird complex about that. I want to do the best I can, but I think that...
Well, how does it work? Because coming out of that season, that clearly is different than it was when you were there. Like, tonally, like, your fans are going to be recognize that you're back. They're going to hear that tone again, hopefully, right? And that will be,
yeah, they're going to
feel breath of fresh air.
My love and kisses, yeah. But it won't be in the form of a fucking Matrix spoof. Like, I won't be like, I'm back. Look, the wire. Like, I won't. That's not what I ever
was. You should do the wire. You should do a wire spoof right out of the bat.
I mean, I just... Boy, man. Watching those characters without me there is not fucking cool, man. It was like... Just flipping through Instagram, just watching your girlfriend just blow a million... It's the worst. It is like all the comments underneath it. People going like, "Well, season 3 kind of sucked. How do you know this wouldn't happen anyway?" fuck you. That's how, like if on Facebook, like, if your girlfriend was with a new guy and it's like, you know, sometimes it's like Joanna and Dean are in a relationship and there's a heart icon, and then like one of your friends is like, "Thumbs up. Troy likes this." Like, "Hey, come on." Don't even trip, dog. All right. I I left a voicemail on you guys know, you live in LA, so you probably know this legend of Bill Murray doesn't have like representation. He just has this 1-800 number and a voicemail line. So I left a voicemail for him while I was watching season four. I called him and left a voicemail.
What did you say?
I just said, call me back.
You had to preamble it with who you
I said,
were.
I said, my name is Dan Harmon. I created an NBC show called Community. I would like to talk to you as soon as possible about the possibility of you...
Did you stutter that much during
yeah.
that?
Probably, yeah. I just probably just sounded like a rogue.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by CarMax. CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because CarMax believes you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car they sell has CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure, with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive. CarMax, the way car buying should be. Start shopping now at CarMax.com.
I was just like today on a plane with Joel Murray, his brother, the youngest Murray, and he was saying that Bill has recently done a TV guest on something, and before that it was Silver Spoon or Different Strokes. Like that's how long it was.
Silver Spoon was the movie that Silver Spoons was based on.
Family Ties.
So, was it Family Ties?
He was the alcoholic brother who ruined a corporation.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Adam Goldberg.
Adam Goldberg.
I mean, we can't verify if he's right or wrong yet.
Adam Goldberg for the sociopathic win. No.
He's
Machiavellian. He doesn't care. He contributed, and I sneak out into the night, and then we'll all be like, "What? There's no show called Family Ties." But he'll be up to his neck in puss. That's all he cares about.
To his neck in puss.
So I left a voicemail for Bill Murray. Is there anything I don't know?
But do you know what happens next? Like, what's pursuant?
Well,
to
Bill
that?
Murray calls me back, and we hang out. And...
But does he have somebody call you back? Do you know how that works?
He's like this weird, mysterious man that like. I don't know, ask the guys that made Zombieland. I think they just called his number and left a message, I assume. I don't know. Like, I think he just calls you back and goes like, "Hey, it's Bill Murray." I don't know. I know it's not going to happen to me, but it's like I think it was a healthy exercise because I was watching the Jeff Meets His Father episode. Of course, I always wanted Jeff's father to be Bill Murray. I kept putting off the meeting between Jeff and his father because I kept hoping that somehow fate would allow for that to be the case. I named him Jeff Winger. His last name is Winger after Bill Murray's character in Stripes. I just always thought that Jeff Winger's dad would be Bill Murray. But there's something awesome about, you know, having all of those preconceived notions kind of ripped away from you. It's exciting.
How much would that fuck Jeff?
There's something awesome about being held down and watching your family get raped on a beach. It's liberating. It makes you focus on what's important.
Happy Father's Day, by the way, everybody. Did you call your dad today?
Yeah, I called my dad. Erin was calling her dad, so I had nothing to do. So I called my dad. My dad. One of the coolest things about him the second coolest thing about him is that he knows how to do a quick surgical Father's Day call. Like he's wanting to get off the phone as soon as I am. No sooner, no later. Aaron's dad will just hang up on her. like, which is weird. It's a weird fantasy we all have. Like, I wish my dad wanted to talk less. But her dad is like he's her dad.
Wait, because she goes on and on, or because
no? I'm sure she does. But Aaron's dad, by her report, has this weird phone behavior that is similar to people in TV and movies. The way they never say goodbye or hello, they just like they go, okay, well, see you then, and they just he just hangs up on her all the time. You can ask her about it later.
All right.
My dad, I guess, because it is Father's Day, I do want to, because I talk so much sometimes when I'm talking to a microphone, because like a hamster that knows which lever gives him a treat. Like I know that I was my parents were 70s hands-on parents, and I know that's it's such a fucking button you can push to make people go, oh, that's so cool. Your dad hit you once. And I think all of our parents were dicks. And the thing about being a parent is that it's a thankless fucking job. If you're doing it right, it's thankless. I think everybody in LA and everybody in our generation probably is starting to realize that there's an epidemic among Generation X of parents who try to be their kid's best friend, to try to be perfect, and we're all seeing how those kids are turning out. Parenting, you when you atone with the father, as Joseph Campbell would say, you become an impersonal cosmic force. You make it sunny, you make it rain. Like, the kid is never really going to do anything but complain when it's raining and do nothing when the sun is shining, and your best reward is that they grow up into a human being and they go out in the world and they're not, you know, we're human beings. How often do you, in the midst of your awesomeness, do you stop and go, good thing my parents were born? Like, you're all about yourself, and you're like, you're on your own little adventure, and your parents at best are like, you know, you remember fond things about the, you know, warm little cuddly memories, or them like, you know, just hitting you with a belt. But my dad, I will say, because it takes too much longer, and is too. It's not as easy to say, like, holy shit, my dad was awesome. Like in very, very specific ways. Your father, if you're lucky enough to have one, like, it is the first guy you meet. He is your male role model. That means that the way that he treats women is, it's not necessarily how you're going to treat women, but it is the first instance of a man treating a woman some way that you witness. And I think I owe all of my fights with Aaron to a kind of like the fact that I found a woman that has a kind of semi-compatible understanding of how a man and a woman fight constantly, and we enact these dramas and all this stuff. But that's, if you go to enough therapy, you can wipe that out. You can recondition yourself. As I've always said, Hitler's dad didn't kill 12 million Jews, and if Hitler had a son, he wouldn't kill 3 million. It doesn't work that way. It's just, you know, anyone can be different from how they were raised or who they were raised by. But the stuff that works, like, because there's no reason for you to overcome it, that's the stuff that really counts. And I think my dad's, like, the coolest thing about him was he was just a self-made man. He wasn't like Rodney Dangerfield in Caddyshack. It wasn't like fuck you society. Like, he was so lowborn, my dad, that he never even got the cockiness to do it out of spite. He only just like knew that no one would ever help you unless you helped yourself. And every time I, you know, every piece of wisdom I ever got from him while I watched him earn the money that we used to buy our food, and it was always all the messaging that went into my brain about what a man's role is in this world within his family was very, very strong positive messaging, because my dad was a bootstrapper and just like dyed in the wool, fuck rich people, fuck kissing ass. My dad said, I interviewed him for a sixth grade project. It was like, interview your dad and ask him 10 questions or something. And I asked, I was a little sixth grade journalist, and I interviewed him in the basement where he would hide and make stained glass and try to forget about how much his dad hit him. And he would always wear this, those V-neck Hanes T-shirts with a Sharpie pen like clipped to the collar, because he would just take the Sharpie pen and like mark it all over the place. I know that I'm also famous for sticking the Sharpie pen up my ass. It's really not related, I don't think, but
it smells like Origin Story.
Certainly in the hands of a Christopher Nolan, like this is starting to come together, yeah. But I remember my dad sitting behind this desk in this dark basement while I sat there and tried to fulfill the obligations of this elementary school interview project. And I said, "What's your advice to young people?" And my dad said, "Don't kiss anyone's ass. Don't do it. If you for the rest of your life, everyone will always tell you, pick your battles, kiss a little bit of ass, and then you get to stop kissing ass later. It's a lie. They all just want their ass kissed. They think that if they tell you that, they're going to get to kiss less ass too. It's all garbage. It's all bullshit. You have to just do everything yourself."
That's pretty spicy stuff for a sixth grade project.
Yeah, but he didn't, you know, in that regard, he didn't...
He wasn't kissing your sixth grade teacher's ass.
He wasn't kissing my ass. He wasn't talking down to me. He wasn't, like, sugarcoating it. He's talking to another little guy. I think in a lot of ways my dad was, you know... Like, I can clearly see sometimes when I think about, when I talk to his biological mom about his childhood, I you know, you think about your dad as a child. Like, that's the atonement with the father, when you realize that your dad was once an animal out there trying to figure things out. I remember talking to his mom about, she told me this story about how my dad in the trailer park they grew up in, he loved money. Because they didn't have any. Like, you'd love it. Like, he didn't love it like Scrooge McDuck loves it. He loved it like a fucking, like the monkeys in 2001 love a monolith. He'd have like six single dollars, and he'd keep them in a coffee can, and he would iron them and wash them and stack them up and count them. And he kept them in a coffee can, and then had a special spot where he buried them, because he wouldn't keep them in the trailer where he lived, because that was less safe than burying it like an animal because of the guys his mom would bring home. So he had buried treasure. And then at some point, I think someone got wise and probably saw him. You know, I think I told my dad the story, and my dad was like, "No, that was that fucking guy." Like, my dad knew who dug up his coffee can.
Wow.
His mom was telling me this story when I was in my 20s, and I was like, "Holy shit, my dad was like a little guy that like with a coffee can of dollars that got taken from him. Like, he was bullied. He was up against all odds." My dad survived the polio epidemic. He walks with one of his legs is withered because so many of his peers, they got wiped out in this epidemic in the 50s. But he survived it, but it cost him a bunch of muscle tissue in one of his legs. He's this kind of burly guy with these Popeye forearms and this big red mustache, and he walks with this limp. And the limp somehow always made him more foreboding than if he walked like a regular guy.
What was your phone call like today?
It was dumb, boring. Fuck that guy. No, it's just, it's terse, you know? My dad and I, like, I remember being in my 20s and being back in Milwaukee for some reason, and I took a tour with my dad of this facility. Here's the thing about my dad. My dad was the video duplication king of the Midwest. He started out mopping floors at a film lab in Milwaukee. And it was sort of like the Boogie Nights thing. Like there was this new thing called VHS that started happening. And my dad told his boss, like, "I think that VHS is going to probably make a lot of this stuff obsolete. All of this like film duplication that we're doing, these slides that we're making for people who have cooking instruction videos or whatever." So his boss was like, "Come on, you know, whatever. Like celluloid, who will ever defeat that for the transmission of information. And my dad started his own company, which meant that he took two VCRs and hooked them together in my bedroom and duplicated a tape 10 times for one client that needed like a how to make bread video duplicated or something. So he'd gotten enough money to buy two more VCRs, and then he rented a small office space and had two racks of VCRs and was siphoning clients off of this company that he used to work for, because they're all going, oh shit, VHS, this is where we're going. And my dad started that, rode that wave, started his own business, like ended up having like 50 employees in a big building, and making his own, you know, VHS tapes and like a part of the building, like really just like did it, you know, like took that business to its peak, sold it to his biggest competitor, who was like the video king of America, and then just as DVDs came along. So there was a guy that worked for my dad who started his own business after my dad sold his. He had a DVD duplication facility. And I was back in Milwaukee, and I walked around with my dad and this guy who was basically my age. But he was this guy that had worked for my dad for years. And the guy was showing him the DVD duplication facility that he had created, this little ragamuffin kind of like six employee kind of operation. And my dad was looking around and got the whole tour, and he went, huh, yeah, it's a pretty good operation you got going here. And the guy said, yeah, I learned from the best. And my eyes involuntarily started squirting water, and my heart like...
It's called crying, Dan.
Look, water is leaking from their eyes. It's called tears. It is a symbol of their weakness. Ming the Merciless. Because I realized, oh shit, oh god, this guy that came home at 10 p.m. every night, he was fathering people that it was easier to father. You know, it was basing it on like, what do you do, and do you do it well?
Oh, you didn't cry because you were proud of your father. You cried because you were like, he had other surrogate children.
Because I suddenly did this flood of realization. It was like. When you're a kid and your dad goes to work, and then your dad works that hard, you think of work as being a Beetlejuice void outside the door where there's sandworms and time doesn't exist out there. And in that moment, I suddenly, it was like a sitcom epiphany where I was like, oh no, work was family. Work was young men who looked up to him and who were, he was able to connect with because they weren't his sons. And they looked at him as an important man and tried to impress him and regarded his favor as worthwhile, whereas he had a much more complicated, messy relationship with the guy that was generated from one of his loads. You know, I was like, where, how are we ever gonna, you know, have that traditional father-son relationship when, you know, he work was what meant everything to him. And then cut to him coming to LA for the first time, and it was back when Channel 101 had just gotten a pilot on VH1, and we were all hanging out in a bar, all these Channel 101 kids, and like my dad walked him out to his car after he spent that time. You met him that night at the bar, and it was like we were just celebrating the fact that, oh god, we're gonna do a sketch show that's based on Channel 101. We've been doing this thing for no money forever, and now we're gonna do a couple episodes of this thing on this basic cable show and station. And then we went out to the car, and my dad was like, I can't remember what he said. He's like, oh, that's pretty impressive. We got a lot of people in there. They look up to you a lot. And I was like, yeah. I you know, wanted to be you, like that. That's all I understand a man to be, and like I just hugged him, and like when you asked the question, how was the phone call for Father's Day? It was like, it's nothing. It's like, have you eaten any deviled eggs lately? Yes, I have. They're good. They're so deviled. I gotta go. Bye. Like it's not even like there's like a well of emotion pushing against a dam. It's just like that's not the channel through which my admiration for him, my connection with him, is ever going to exist. That unconditional, weird, like, mammalian love, like, where it's just like, oh, my dad took me fishing, showed me how to throw a ball. My dad was crippled. He didn't know how to throw a ball. He was a nerd like me. It's technical. There's so much love there, so much importance, so much admiration, but it's going through like channels on the circuit board that are not designed to carry that signal. You're putting hugs through a fucking fiber optic wire, but the stuff is getting through there, and then sometimes it's. And then it's, I don't know.
How old is he now?
30. He also invented time travel. I buried the lead on this. I don't know. He's probably 60. I'm a bad son. I don't know. I don't know what color his eyes are. I don't know.
My dad, like, you know, he was like the super dad. He was 40 or 41 when he had me. And so I've always known him with, like, he just looked like, you know, George Clooney had salt and pepper hair, and he taught me how to throw a fucking curveball when you weren't allowed to in Little League because it was bad for your arm, which is why my right arm has no range of movement. Like, I can scratch the back of my head with my left arm, and my right arm doesn't do anything because, like, I could throw a wicked breaking ball as a child.
They found out that throwing balls is bad for kids' arms?
They said, like, that you're not allowed to throw curveballs because it's a really unnatural movement on your shoulder and elbows and stuff, and so I had, like, crazy, like, you know, but I played tennis and stuff, but, like, also, like, he could fix anything, do anything. He was like Ma and Pa Joe. Like, he moved west from Nebraska, and I was just in Nebraska 2 days ago, 50 miles away from the Davis farm where he was born, in between two towns. And like, they really moved during the Dust Bowl, and he farmed beans and hops and whatever grew, and he went to Oregon and came down to California. And then by the time he was a teenager, he had like he had a car, and he went to the Korean War, and then came back, and he was like this really groovy Californian guy. But he can build and do anything. He's a fuck off artist. He can draw or paint, sculpt, like, anything with his hands. He can do engineering of any sort. If a horse nearby was winning, and he goes, "Oh, the horse is giving birth. I'll be right back." Like, he's the guy that could do it. And he's the guy that if the captain and the navigator and the co-pilot all had bad fish, and the plane's going down, the fuselage of the plane would instinctively look at my dad and go, that's our man. And he's 80 years old, but he's like, he came and saw a show I did in Vegas with Drew Carey and the Hoos Line Gang. And he's, you know, white hair, like, you know, like kind of a turtleneck and a jacket. And he's kind of suave looking. And we're just having a conversation. And women that were younger than me, my age, older than me, his age, kept crossing the casino to come up to him and say, "Excuse me, I'm sorry. We have to tell you, you're the most debonair man we've ever seen in our life." And he doesn't have a big mouth. I talk too much. My dad doesn't. He just sits there and looks like he could land the plane, and he's the fucking best.
I've met him, like, for the podcast listeners, I think, like this is probably oversimplified, but just so you have a visual, like, Jeff's dad, kind of like Jay Peterman from Seinfeld. Kind of like a...
Yeah, I think I know who you're talking about. Yeah. But, like, we were kids. We were in Maui on a vacation, and someone yelled on the beach, like, "There's a woman out there. She's drowning." And, like, there's an old lady that got swept up in the current, and she was just floating out there. There was a dead woman out there. And I just remember that moment of, like, people just look around, like, what are we going to do? And then before you can even look back, my dad is out there, and he pulls her in, and he's giving her CPR. She was dead. It was like there was no helping it. But it was just like my memory of my dad is like he could fucking do anything. Like if this room caught fire, we'd all sit here and go, "Oh, Jesus Christ, we're gonna die." But if my dad were in the room and you hadn't seen him yet, you would just instinctively turn around and go, "There he is." And my dad would look around and he would stick his tongue out slightly, like. It just, like, his tongue would go out a little bit, and that meant I'll fix it. And I told my dad, like, years ago, like, you know, he's stoic. He's working class. He's a hard worker, and he's not a really emotional. Like, my mom is really emotional. I'm more her emotionally. I cry watching you talk about your dad right now. Like, I'm the first one to cry. My dad is very stoic, but not like in a tough ass way. He's just, you know, he keeps it in. And I told him one time, I wrote him a big card to say like how much I love him, and I'm gonna start crying. I warn you already. And I wrote him. I'll try not to, but I wrote him this big card. And it's like, no, fuck, this is stupid. I'll just call him. So I called him up and told him how much I loved him, how much I looked up to him, and he was like, what? I was like, Dad, all I do is brag about you. I listen to my friend's stories.
You said I was a booger eating turd monster.
I was two years old.
I didn't have the word power. You were back then a booger eating turd monster. Yeah.
Now you're a hero. But I told him, I said, like, compared to my friend's dad's, like, you hear these stories, there's these conflicts and these battles and like the distance and stuff. I said, like, if I grow up to be like half. Or like a third of the man, a third of the father. If I had a third of your work ethic, I'd be the coolest person in the world. Like currently, like other than you. And
see, like, if like, I could smash a third of the puss.
Oh yeah. My dad got drunk one time. Were you there? We went out and had drinks one time. My dad lives in like near Laguna Beach, and Dan and I went there, and I had to take a stupid business call, and I came back in, and they were like best friends. And my dad had a couple beers and started telling a story. That was like the sexiest, like getting laid story of all time. I'd never heard it before. But the thing is, like, I'd never been out with the boys. It was just, you know, me and like it's usually family stuff. But he told this amazing story, and like you also know that that's not the beginning of it. Like he clearly is a. I told my dad, like, we're getting
less. He's a puss smasher.
He's a professional puss smasher. The Davises are getting less cool. I'm the least cool Davis. My brother's better than me.
We're on the Mayan calendar. We're in the seventh world. It's like.
But I went to Nebraska, and I'm meeting people, and you walk down the street, and these people that kind of walk tall, and they're very sweet, and they're very nice, and they're very focused, and they seem to enjoy their lives out there in a way that, like, if you go to a restaurant here in L.A., people don't like what they're doing. They got to be something else. They're not a waitress. They're not a fucking actor. I don't do commercials. I'm a film actor. Like everybody's bigger than what they're currently doing, so nobody's ever fucking pleased with themselves. And that's a good thing too. I mean, like, ambition can be good, it can be bad. But it was really cool, like being 50 miles away from where my dad was born. My grandma told me a story because my grandma was the coolest. She died like when she was 87, I think, and the smartest, funniest, and just tough as fucking nails, and never had a sniffle in her life until she was so old that she just, you know, like, I'm just going to slowly fall asleep and die with a smile on my face. And she was the coolest. And she said she made these beans. She made red beans. And I would go to her house, and I was broke. I was, you know, like in high school and college, I had no money. And I would go there, and she'd always have this big-ass kettle of beans in the fridge. And it was the most delicious thing I'd ever had in my life since I was a baby. I loved it. And she would always make them for me. And one day she's looking at me. She's like, you really like those beans? And I said, this is my favorite thing in the world. And she goes, that's so funny. It's like, I feel so bad about that. It's like when your father was a little boy, we were, you know, we were like in the Dust Bowl, and we were traveling, just itinerant farmers. That's all we had. All you had was food that you could dry and put a little water on and make something out of. And so she's really good at making beans delicious. And he's like, we ate beans for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and your father loved them every meal. And he would come in, and he would sing a little song. And he would go, cook-a-beans, cook-a-beans. And he would do a little jig in the kitchen. And she would, like, cry because she's like, you should be having meat. Like, you should be eating something. And she goes, and if there was ever a chicken, if it was in August, that was Thanksgiving. Because there was not going to be a chicken. And so she's like, my grandma was too old and too cool and too way too stoic to start crying about that. She's like, yeah, I felt like a bad mom. Like, because, you know, I couldn't believe your dad liked beans that much. It's like, well, you fucking make really good beans.
N-word.
Nigga.
Yeah, I want to keep the touching Father's Day theme going with a special guest in a minute. But I also want to, I just kind of like, someone did a sarcastic wolf whistle. Ooh, Father's Day episode. This thing's really heating up. No,
they think Chevy Chase is coming out.
And by the way, I think it's like a post-25 thing, not to make a sweeping generalization, but I think probably this audience being your demographic, people are coming out on a Sunday night to a comic book store to watch a fat guy that got fired and blah blah blah. You're cusping on that age when you're going to start getting melodramatic about your parents. And it doesn't, I mean, honestly, like, nobody you're allowed to think they're assholes. Like, it's not,
but I wonder,
nothing drove me more nuts than people I would complain about my family. million people go, yeah, but they're all, that's your family. That's all you've got. And I'd be like, fuck you. fuck you and fuck them. Like, you're better than my family because I'm allowed to walk away from you, and I'm going to do that now because you just told me to love my family.
As 25-year-olds, were there spankings?
Yeah.
There were. No?
Yeah.
It's a 50-50?
An eruption of, yeses and noes. I mean,
there was fucking corporal punishment when we were kids. I don't, like now, you see kids. I was on when I flew out to this gig, we're in first class, and there was a woman in front with a 2-year-old child who's going to have the ear popping thing, and the child's going to be miserable. And we all know that. And so no one's going to be a bad. No one's going to go, oh, geez, kid in first class. Because it's a small enough plane. It's going to be a crying kid no matter what. But the kid wasn't the problem. The mother was a piece of garbage. And she was up and down and haranguing the flight staff and apologizing to everybody about her kid. It's like, the kid's too. You're an asshole. You're a bad mom. And then we found out when they all got up at the end of it, the father and the older daughter were sitting right behind them and never said a word. They just played it cool and let this poor woman run around. I was like, I wanted to punch me and everybody. It was the worst. I remember flying as a kid. I didn't cry because I knew if I did, I would be on the fucking wing. You were not allowed to be an asshole kid back when spanking was like legit.
At Outback Steakhouse, your wish is our command. Back by popular demand, steak and lobster at a special price starting at $19.99. Come enjoy our bold center-cut sirloin seasoned with our signature blend of 17 spices and paired with a buttery, succulent lobster tail. Hurry in to Outback Steakhouse where your steak and lobster wishes come true at a price you can't miss. Steak and lobster, starting at $19.99. No rules, just right.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
All right, so we have a son that we've adopted here at Harmontown.
I like to think so.
His name is Spencer. He's our dungeon master. He's our boy. But you know he has a real father, as well, who is here tonight. And I was hoping he could come up and we could have a little chat with him. Andy, are you willing to come up? This is Spencer's dad. You can talk about cha-cha. Grab, yeah.
The father of our dungeon master, Spencer Crittenden. Andy Crittenden, everybody.
So you are the creator of the creator of worlds.
Well, yes, I did create him with a load, as he so called.
World's grossest callback.
Isn't it amazing how little men have to endure at the actual inception, you know, like that? Yeah. It's so funny because, like, it's not so funny. That's certainly not new territory to tread. But it's like, but how much more seriously we take it? I don't think we shouldn't take it seriously. I think that, like, especially when I started getting into Joseph Campbell and stuff, like the theme that kept flying off of these pages to me was like, oh, we have lost the father son axis. We have lost this power that because, like, if a father loves his son, or fuck loves, like, if a father and son respect each other, that like line of power, like, that you see in Star Wars and stuff, even when the dad is a piece of shit, it's so much more powerful than any system. And I don't believe in conspiracies. I don't think anybody's ever deliberately done anything, because I don't think any human being is smart enough to do it. I think systems are smarter at doing what systems do. I think systems are in the process of completely, like, dissolving the father-son bond. I think that like we regard much the same as we like oh, those towers blew up. Like, who are those guys? Well, they're a bunch of guys that can put funny things in their head. They believe in God. They think that God's gonna give them a snake when they die. They're fucking. Everybody go to Citibank and go to Toys R Us and just play cool. Like we're things that are mythical and powerful and special that don't have anything to do with a dollar changing hands. Like this system that is driven by dollars changing hands is like jumping on it and corroding it. That's why every prom night, every son, you know, has a drunken fucking wrestling match with his dad on the kitchen floor, because when he was 13, they didn't go out in the woods and get circumcised on a tree stump. Your thoughts, Spencer's dad?
Just a couple thoughts about his birth, if I might. And he'll probably kill me for this later, but since you brought up circumcision, when he was born,
rock your body, child.
He was a really large baby, and he came out, and this was my second child. He came out with like
a beard.
No. A giant red testicles. I mean, these things were like the size of your heart. They were
the
so
size
big.
Of my heart.
Yeah, literally. They're like,
oh, how romantic.
Which was a little bit worrisome, you know.
Wait, you mean the size of an adult human heart?
Yeah, no, they were like a softball.
Right. I should point out, you know? Most people in the audience don't work in the testicle industry. The human heart is a standard unit of measure for
testicle size.
Your son has three heart testicles.
You're saying that not each testicle was its own human heart. The entire unit of both testicles,
the whole sack and everything,
human heart. So it was fist sized.
Yeah. So but the other interesting thing about his birth was
that's pretty
interesting. His mom had a C-section, and so when you have another C-section, they don't want to cut as far because of muscles and everything. So they don't cut as far as they did on the first C-section. And he was bigger than our first son. And so as a result, he was actually looking around in the world before he was technically born. His head was out of Diane's body. We got this great kind of science fiction alien baby shot. And he's kind of just, you know, you got the blood.
This looks like Quato from Total Recall.
And he's just kind of looking around like, do I really want to come out? And I think, as we know, you know, some 24 years later, the answer is he probably wished he had.
Yeah, no, he seems like a guy who considers all of this a barely tolerable interruption.
Exactly. As he does his father, by the way.
Well, let's talk about that, because you seem like a delightful guy. Spencer is clearly a delightful guy, but you're his father and he's your son. So, like what? I mean, we're in the green room and Spencer has that like. He has that Spencer face or Spencer lack of face on, and you're sitting there and you're in your sneakers and you're delighted to be here and you're funny. I want to ask Spencer like is your bummed that your dad's here? Is he embarrassing you? Because like kids get embarrassed by their parents by default. Doesn't matter how cool they are. Doesn't matter. And I just what's my question? Okay, here's my question. I would, because in my wildest dreams, I would have if I were to have a son, I would be so relieved if the doctors could show me some kind of chronological sonogram. I'd go, you're gonna have a Spencer. You know, he's not gonna be doing pull-ups for a living. He's going to design dungeons. He's going to be very smart and fair and honest and have a high IQ and I would be so much happier about that than if they said, well, Channing Tatum is going to come out and, you know, he'll be great. People are going to love him in this movie and he'll be great at football. But so, and I kind of get the vibe that you like but he's your son. So is there frustration there? Do you?
Well, the hardest thing about Spencer is it's hard to raise a child who's twice as smart as you. You know, I mean, when he was like 6 or 7, he told us what he wanted to do for his birthday party. And then he proceeded to organize all the kids, and he did like a, he got this little Casio keyboard, and they wanted to play a version of Musical Chairs. And so I said, okay, let's start. He goes, no, Dad. And he took it away from me, and he's like organizing the kids and doing all this stuff. And
Nathan will sit over there. The cake will be shaped like a skull, candles emerging from its eye sockets.
8 obelisks set aflame.
The power of my birth will be recognized.
But he kind of had a twisted sense of humor. We were
Don't worry about that. That's...
We were at the beach. He was in junior high, and we were at the beach, and he got on his mind he wanted to catch a seagull. So this is in Ventura somewhere. So how do you catch a seagull? Well, like any animal, you set up some food. And so he told us what to do. Kind of half buried himself in sand and then put a towel over himself. And then we,
it's like the deer
we had like Cheetos lined up about 10 feet away, leading to right on top of his chest. And then he waited, and he was very patient.
I mean, I would use a box. It sounds like he wanted to catch and terrify a seagull.
Well, he did. And I want to tell you, all of us humans, there's a reason we have these brows here. Because he caught the seagull with the towel and wrapped it around, and the seagull went... And all Spencer could see is like the seagull's throat coming at his eye. And obviously this protected his eye from getting pecked out, at which point you realize, as a parent, this probably wasn't the smartest thing that you could do. But so he caught the seagull, and then I don't know why, but he had some string, and he tied it to his foot, and then he kind of flew him around like a kite for the rest of the day.
It's like that scene from Game of Thrones with a dragon.
Yeah, it's Spencer Joffrey. Is it? Then you gave him a crossbow for his 16th birthday. And
No. What happened to the seagull?
Well, we decided that somebody might come along at a certain point and find us after some people were kind of pointing their fingers at us and
right.
stuff. And
I mean, do you just let it go and hit it?
Yeah, yeah.
Still got a string attached to it to this day.
Probably so.
I mean, if you ask Spencer a question about anything, it doesn't matter if you're asking him about his relationship with his father or the economy or what we should do next week for D&D or how he's feeling or what he had for lunch. I mean, he's kind of got that. He's staring off into space and talking like this. And yeah, my dad's here. Is it a thankless job like I was describing earlier? Like do you feel like, hey, fuck you, man? Like I'm your dad. Like be a fan of mine.
Yeah, it's somewhat thankless. But it's hard because he's right in that wheelhouse age you're talking about, where you start to see a transition. And, you know, I've been trying to get Spencer to move on with his life for a while.
Which he just has. He's just moved out.
Yeah, yeah, like a month ago. I've been trying for 3 years, but he thinks it's, he thinks it's because I hate him. And I'm like, well, to me, the biggest value of college is that you're getting out of the house and learning to live on your own. And you know, so and he didn't go to college. He decided not to because, you know, he was smarter than all of his teachers. And,
yeah,
and I
went to college. It's not all it's cracked up to be.
Yeah, yeah, and I went to college and got a degree. And I say it's not all it's cracked up to be.
I dropped out. I was doing stand. Yeah, getting out of your parents' house was like the thing that I needed to do was go smoke two packs of cigarettes a day and do stand up and drink a lot. It was like a roulette ball. You just need to get the world spinning underneath you, and you're just gonna land somewhere specific, and it can't be your parents' house.
Right.
And it might, you know, who knows where it's gonna lead. I feel like we should get Spencer up here because we need to
protect me.
It's a good looking crowd.
So when did your balls
Yeah, okay, I gotta clear something up real quick. When I was looking around mid-birth, I wasn't like, I'm not so sure I want to come out here. I was like, hey, you guys, don't freak out. But my balls are huge.
I've been watching them for 9 months.
I'm smart enough to know balls don't need to be this big.
They went back to normal, trust me.
I don't believe you.
There's going to be this whole movement like, show us your scrotal certificate. But yeah.
Or just take your balls out.
I'm behind a table.
Is there anything like...
Meaning they're already out.
I've always had my suspicions.
Yeah, Spencer has polyhedral balls. Yes. 20 sides. You just recently moved out of your place. You were living with your parents, and now you're and I don't know. Like Spencer was working in the back of the Apple Store. Now I'm bringing him on as. Then this doesn't seem like a glorious upgrade. But Spencer's going to be my personal assistant as I'm working over at Community. But really, I want it to be like kind of an apprenticeship because you're a creative guy, and I think you have writing aspirations and certainly have writing potential. And I think I kind of trust you. Like I always have a difficulty with when you have an assistant. Like when I was talking earlier about how my dad's the trailer park and blah blah blah. Don't kiss anyone's ass. Part of what comes with that is like don't tell other people what to do. Don't be a fucking dick. You don't have it right. And that really gets in the way of delegating rooms full of writers and having someone get you coffee and all this stuff. You feel like you want to apologize every time you ask someone to do something, but that just makes it more uncharismatic and like oftentimes you're just doing more harm than good. My point being, you're gonna follow me around now. You're gonna sit in the writer's room and sit there with your beard and watch me work with the writers on Community. And
it's a crazy trajectory because you came to Harmontown, Spencer, without telling anybody that you really felt like you should be playing D&D with Dan Harmon. Then that night, he says, anybody here, Dungeon Master, you do. You come up. You're in the show. We go on tour together. And you're a huge part of our show now. And now, like, it's like... We've taken him away from Andy here. You know, he's moved out to Hollywood.
But Andy was pushing that rock out the door for 3 years.
Hey, like, I wish I lived where Spencer does right now, just down the street from Paramount. So
yeah, that's going to be perfect.
Yeah,
just down the street.
I'm still processing it, I guess.
Wait. So you got a place three doors down from Paramount?
Four doors.
Did you foresee working on Community like you foresaw playing D&D?
No, it's all just bullshit, man. It's crazy. It's, you know, Jackson is a guy who I met through Dustin. We all share similar birthdays, so we met at like a joint birthday party we had.
Jackson is a guy who comes to Harmontown all the time.
Yeah, and so he's a cool guy. And so we got to talking, and we went to an arcade and played some video games. I mean, you know, talking, nerd stuff.
This is why the moon colony is going to work.
Yeah.
Society's going to be... It's, instead of elections, you just have shamanic coincidences.
Yeah. That's all it's been. And then he just... one time he was like, hey, man, you should come room here. It's really cheap. And it was the first time I'd, like, seen any place I could move out to that was... within my money. I had just gotten the job at Apple not too long ago, increasing my income, but, you know, still finding an affordable place was eluding me.
And I've watched a lot of documentaries about cults and things, and I see where everyone gets tripped up, like cults that work. They all start with an awesome guy like me saying, hey, it's cool, man. I'm not awesome. And then everyone's like, yeah, but you are. And I'm like, all right, if you insist. And then you go and get a place, like on the moon or in Maui or something. And the downfall is always when the old fat guy at the top that started it all starts to go, yeah, you know, and it's like, hey, you know, if you're 16 and you're a girl, you know, like, well, hey, ooh.
Yeah. And you find a rose in your pillow at night. Yeah, so that means
it's time for you and I to like play Monopoly.
Are you gonna fuck Spencer? What's going on here? Where is this going?
I'm making my promise to our moon colony that I will not fuck your daughters or you. I am in love with Aaron, and I will stick to the you know I that because it seems like that's the shoelace that trips every cult leader up. When they go, like, they just can't avoid the temptation. They go like, man, I could really parlay this into smashing some puss. And it's just like, it's not worth it, you know? It just fucks everything up. What was that? Hey, Aaron, what was the name of that documentary? Who's that guy?
The Source Family.
The Source Family. Please, everyone watch. I'm not kidding.
It's like
just
laughing.
Hey,
very interesting.
Oh, what?
Aaron, just get out here. Aaron McGathy, everybody.
but no, please watch this documentary called The Source Family. It's amazing. I recommended the WikiLeaks thing, and I want to stress. I got a couple tweets from WikiLeaks impassioned people. I did not mean to imply that the documentary WikiLeaks We Steal Secrets is somehow like the full story. I got like all these tweets that were like, you know, from people that I think are probably on the right side of justice and stuff, who are like, yeah, that documentary is bullshit. Well, obviously, if a third party makes a documentary about something that you're that, you know, like, into, and it's 2 hours long, you're going to think it should have been 6 hours long and should have included this and that and that and that and that. This is a two-hour documentary that, like, tries to objectively or, like concisely kind of, like explain this, like fascinating story. I never said, oh, man, this is the final word on whether you should respect anything. I think systems suck. I think Julian Assange seems like an awesome fucking guy. I don't know what like how fair that documentary is in terms of how many details it had to cut out in order to be 2 hours long. But anyways, I when I recommend something, it's because it's interesting to watch it for 2 hours. So two more recommendations. Watch the Source Family documentary. It'll blow your fucking mind. It's about this cult that I've never heard of before. It's an amazing study in the evolution of a cult, which is not necessarily an evil thing. Like a cult, it's just like cults are neither good nor bad. They're just this phenomenon that spring up and happen. And then also we went and saw This Is the End tonight at the ArcLight. It's a very funny comedy movie. Everyone should go. I can get behind a big mainstream successful comedy movie. I was delighted by it. Go see it. Seth Rogen's back, everybody.
Thank really heavens.
Good. I felt like I was 10 years old watching Ghostbusters again. It was like, it was really, really funny. If anyone goes and sees This Is the End and thinks that it's not worth your ticket price, I will debate you online. Because I've seen a lot of shitty movies. I'm 40 years old. I'm really jaded. The last thing I'm going to enjoy is a movie about a bunch of famous yahoos playing themselves in a screwball comedy. Like I thought it was delightful. All right.
Spencer, what's your thoughts?
Spencer, go toe-to-toe with your dad.
Yeah, Father's Day fight. Let's clear the air. Let's clear the air right
okay.
now.
Okay.
First of all, tell him you love him.
I love you.
Could all we right. get that in more? Yeah, thank you.
Now, standing on top of a stage, Spencer is awkwardly goaded into showing affection for his paternal relatives.
And then?
Spencer, you got balls as big as your heart.
the show, right?
And vice versa.
That's my tombstone.
I assume your dad should play Kumail's character. Kumail
can't. Oh, yeah, that'll be awesome. Yeah, Kumail Nanjiani can't make it tonight. So
has your dad ever played D&D with you?
Not to my knowledge.
Oh, so this is a very special Father's Day episode.
It really is. I did it. I have a great podcast. And it's just, I don't even work at it. It's just my voice, you know? If you were to fire me, Jeff, I think we would, the critics would go, something's missing. Something's missing. I think something's missing. What the fuck do you think is missing?
Yeah,
unbelievable, the outrage. Like, I had so much retroactive outrage. I can't talk about it. It's too uncharismatic. I just have to sit on my totally justified outrage. What are all the arguments I looked at online where I was like, well, I think season 3 was so shitty that season 4 just seems like, are you fucking kidding me? Fuck. Motherfuck you in the fucking motherfuck. Fuck you. Fuck your mother with your father. Fuck you. Like, fuck you, man. Like, you people hate me that much that they're that willing to debate the possibility that I wasn't. Fuck you. Like, wow, I must be really unlikable.
Well,
Jesus.
I'd like to say I think the key to the success of the podcast, because my wife and I have discussed this, is really that your heart is as big as Spencer's balls.
All right. I just got the key to the city.
Yeah, and also, I could say with almost certain lack of fear of contradiction that we have a title for our next episode.
Is it your heart is as big as Spencer's balls?
Or balls as big as Spencer's heart? I don't know.
Oh, man. This is redundant, but you should know that everyone in the booth was crying when you were talking about your dad. When I say everyone, I mean Dustin Marshall, our producer. We had to grab, like,
the father-son stuff is not a fake thing. It's like when you watch Lion King, when you read Hamlet, when you father son stuff just like gets you, like because there is a power there. I mean, it's almost unfair because the reason the power is there is precisely because there's not an actual visceral connection on the level of the actual people that are carrying the child, squeezing it out at their own peril, and if that child should be female, you know, the bond between it's like us of the dangling wee wee. when you have a little wee wee and you use your little wee wee to make another thing with a little wee wee.
Please let us of the dangling wee wee be your cult name.
It you know, it's like, because there is absolutely nothing that wee wee that male symbol, you know, the universal symbol for male and female, the male one is like this circle with an arrow coming out of it. I think that's so potent because it's like men are just this cursed half of the species that have a life expectancy of, you know, what, 20 years less, and we lose our hair as we get older because we're riddled with this disease called testosterone. We don't actively create with our bodies, which life in the beginning, before the development of sexual reproduction, all cells were these asexual reproducing cells. Like if you all life was in the same soup, and life meant creating new life. It meant that you were never more than one unit of life away from a thing that was actually you in some real way. And then when plants were, you know, developing and trying to figure out how they could develop faster, sexual reproduction started happening, which carried into biological, what do you call it? Whatever was more advanced than plants. Like men, drones, like these things that create sperm, and we just shoot it wherever we can shoot it. Like we kind of like walk the earth, and like we disconnected from from God. Like we are, and we fetishize that. We have a big martyr complex about it. So we build skyscrapers and missiles and just hate yourselves and each other. I'm gonna make a bigger hole in the world before I leave than you, and I'm gonna fuck more pussy than you, and like, because there's nothing. It's I'm not saying feel sorry for men. It's just like, it's amazing, like how we.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Like
I lost it. It's amazing. Cum is amazing. Happy Father's Day. So may your balls be as big as your heart.
The moral is Dan loves cum, you guys. Just take that away. That's the takeaway.
I love cum.
You can't throw any of it out.
I love cum, Spencer's dad. Your son's coming to work for me on Monday. It's going to be great. It's like Neverland Ranch.
Alternate title, I love
them. All right.
Aaron, you called your dad, right?
I did. I called my dad. My dad actually left a Father's Day. My dad calls me when it's Father's Day or his birthday in the morning and leaves a voicemail. He left me a voicemail about Dan. Speaking about like that father-son connection, I think my dad's so excited about you. He wants you to be his son, so he called me asking me about you. But yeah, my dad has an adorable habit of hanging up on me. Which isn't it's not cold. It's like, hey, Aaron, how's it going? Oh, it's going great. You know, Dan and I are hanging out. We're about to get dinner. Oh, good. My day was good. I grilled and I hung out with the wife and I took a nap and it was a real great day. And then click. They're just like, hang up. And I'm like, yeah,
so
my
weird. Like, he
hello?
Thinks it's a walkie-talkie. Maybe because he was in the Navy. Like, he thinks it's like he's just talking to the bridge.
No, but then you say out.
Well, like,
may I play?
Chaplain
may,
out.
May I play his Father's Day voicemail real quick?
Yeah.
It's 10 seconds. It's about you.
Yeah,
Justin,
if you're
can you
able
hand
to.
Me my phone? Sorry.
You know what a tight ship we run here. I hope, hope this is nice and tidy. So anyways, yeah, sperm.
All right, here we go. And my dad's also great. He's a great guy. He's a little selfish, but he's great.
he's a pastor, right?
He's a pastor. Yeah,
He's a minister of God.
Yeah, he's a minister of God. We were drinking a whole lot yesterday, as we had to, because we were watching a shitty TV show all day.
What season was it?
season fan fiction. Heart, no heart. I'm so sorry.
Remember when he said, Greenblatt said we're bringing the heart back? Like, I mean, fuck you. I'm not allowed to express. I can't do it. That's not fair. Like, fuck you.
So we were drinking a lot. We were hanging out with
what heart? Where was the heart? Oh, the heart. My heart.
What about Britain?
Heart
what about Britain and Troy's really intimate love affair? The movie. Did you guys see the fountain scene? Oh, my heart. Love
the
has
heart.
Never been.
The heart was the size of regular baby's balls.
The heart in that show was as moving as balls. Say, picture of balls. I apologize. Whatever. No one cares what I think about community. No stakes. No one's going to fire me from anything. You're not going to fire me. You're only going to promote me if I make fun of it.
She's right.
Oh, but we were drinking, and I got real emotional.
No.
We were drinking, and we were talking about fathers, and I've done this many times before. I've compared my father to Dan because he's a pastor, and he has people who... He has a flock, you know.
Right.
It's a whole thing. But he's also really obsessed with himself and his... How...
It's not you. You're not a flock. You guys, don't worry about that. It's other people.
Cut to a guy in the back that's dressed like a sheep that hangs his head and walks out. All right. This is my dad's voicemail.
Hey, Aaron, this is Dad.
Wait, where's the speaker?
On the bottom. Jesus Christ.
I know I'm in trouble when Jeff Davis is telling me what a technical thing. All right, here we go.
Hey, Aaron, this is Dad. Colin, say hi.
So Dan, what are you guys doing later?
Wait, it's playing. Oh, speaker.
just want to let you know your boyfriend is a fat alcoholic piece of shit, and he's going to live to 48 the way he eats. It's a reference to the Chevy Chase voicemail.
All right, here we go. Sorry, Andy.
Hey, Aaron, this is Dad. Just thought I'd give you a call. I heard that Dan got the community back again, so I just wanted to talk to you and get an update and see how y'all are doing. Love you. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
I mean, that's his Father's Day voicemail.
Wait, that's just a voicemail.
No, I know. It's just a voicemail. But
aren't you supposed to be the one calling him for Father's Day?
I know, right? yes. But you're a dad. You have to say that. By the way, you guys haven't talked about it. For the podcast listeners, Spencer's dad looks like, if there was a superhero called Dad, you look like the daddest dad ever. No one's looked more
like
dad.
Like the dad from Family Guy.
Regular son of someone was working in the nuclear facility when an unprecedented bolt of dad energies turned him into...
You have a kind face, sensible glasses, a button-up shirt. It's really nice. Do you like to garden?
As a friend of mine said about a kind face, the kind of face that you'd like to chat on.
Oh.
That's just one variation. Yes, I do like to garden, actually, although I'm getting too old for it now.
Vegetables, flowers?
Well, we had a backyard which was a 2-to-1 ratio hill, and I spent like 2 years of my life making that into a kind of a sunset garden, and since then it's gone to seed and everything, but it was fun.
See, and then at this point, his foes, which are the people who can't have children, are shrinking and dying as he's explaining the... What, that was a weird reaction. I was saying that he was a superhero.
That's a weird bit.
Aaron, I'm sorry. Can we hear that message again? Because that was fascinating. I feel like I missed some of the nuance in that one. I feel like maybe we could revisit that message.
I mean, maybe what we should do is listen to all of his voicemails and we kind of piece it together. It's meaningful to me because my dad, now my dad just talks to me about Dan. He doesn't talk, which is fine, but I was thinking about the father-son connection. Like, it's true that, like, Father's Day, I'm like, golf clubs. Like, I don't care. Like, I love my dad, but it's different. There's not the same thing. And then, like, you know, Mother's Day is... I guess Mother's Day would be more meaningful. Yeah.
Well, Mother's Day came first. And Father's Day, because I looked it up, because I was talking to our friend Lars from Denmark. And as Father's Day, there's different dates in different countries. If you go to the Wikipedia page, it's like a big, long, complicated list of, like dates. But it was an American invention. It was then just adopted, I think, throughout the globe. But on different days, because they probably... I'm assuming that in Denmark, if we say, it has to be the third Sunday of every June, they're like, well, that's Flammenspringen.
Flammenspringen. You know what
can't,
I do have...
Can't has, do it there.
You know what I do have? You know what I do have is the recording of you leaving a voicemail for Bill Murray.
That doesn't matter. It's as unremarkable. I said, hello, Bill Murray, it's Dan Harmon. Give me a call. 323... all right, 555... All right, so we should probably get to Dungeons & Dragons, I assume.
Spencer, if you would pass out the character sheets to Dan and he'll pass those along.
Yeah.
Let's get this shit underway.
Last time on Harmontown D&D. Our heroes had just slain their shadows in a combat most deadly on the shadowy shadow plane of shadows, a slaying which also returned the adventurers to the material plane in the burnt-down ruins of the Kani Forest. Just then, a brilliant emerald energy was released as the Soul of Growth began Soul of Growing the Kani Forest back to its former glory. At the same time, Quark's talking dagger exploded and the ensuing magical energy cloaked itself in branches and roots and began speaking, claiming it was the Soul of Growth. The entity greeted the travelers and thanked them for unwittingly releasing the trapped spirit. After arguing with the newly materialized force of nature, the gang picked a new name for the Avatar of Seasons to avoid confusion, dubbing him Rudy Woodgrowth III.
Jesus Christ, man, your dad's here.
Yeah, I know. The nature spirit gave the heroes crazy awesome nature powers before ushering them through a tree and outside of Yellow Camp, Sharpie's father's home. But would it be, as they expected, a Father's Day reunion? Or would it instead be a demon-infested nightmare? We'll find out next.
God damn it. This is going to be the best Father's Day ever.
It's kind now of... who should clean their room?
Thanks, Adam, for the note that you left on my character sheet.
I gave you Liberty Spikes because that's cool and feminine.
All right. I forgot to mention that. Yeah, he put your hair into Liberty Spikes. Your character's hair into Liberty Spikes.
What?
That happened.
Well, fine. Yeah,
that's
sure.
That's how it works.
Let's all just do whatever.
Yeah, so
that's what Adam Goldberg says at the foot of every woman's bed at 5 a.m. as he refastens his belt. I gave you Liberty Spikes.
And she like
welcome to the wonderful world.
But she doesn't question it because she just wants him to leave. So she's like, yeah, all right.
You'll find out what they are later.
Adam's note at the bottom of my page is, sup E, I owned it. Kisses Adam.
So if you recall, you got season powers, but you didn't know how to use them. So Rudy Woodgrowth III was like, oh, I'll teach you your powers.
Well, I read here that I have the armlet of winter that I can use to call up a sleet storm twice a day, 10-foot radius. Enemies might fall down.
Yeah. So, yeah.
They might fall down.
It's shorthand.
Right.
Also a Final Fantasy I reference. But, yeah. So,
I can calm or intensify hail, sleet, and snow.
Yeah.
I love it. Good.
I mean, there's no peace of mind like having that thing, because even before you use it twice a day, you could just say to the enemy, the way you rack a pump action shotgun,
yeah.
You might fall down. And a lot of times that's more powerful than actually having to use it.
Absolutely.
Or them
it's probable that you'll
down.
Be clumsy. Well, sorry.
I've got a 10 skill modifier on Intimidate. I bet I could combine those together.
Yeah. See, he's like a pro. You know, Jeff's been playing a lot of D&D behind the scenes.
Yeah, I'm learning. I'm figuring this shit out finally.
Yes.
My armlet is the armlet of spring. It can summon armor of thorny vines twice a day. You can command the vines to stop protecting you and lash out to entangle a foe. After they stop entangling, they come back.
That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I can calm and / intensify clouds.
No, guys, wait for it. I promise they're intensifying. Just stare at them for a second.
Clouds, showers.
Are you saying that you've looked at clouds from both sides now?
I don't know. All right. So the way I remember it is we went back to my dad's camp, and what was in place there was like Admiral Darkstar's had taken it over, and some weird shit was going on.
Yeah.
We slinked back out into a field to see if we could learn to use our armlets.
We became the Four Seasons.
Right.
Yeah. And there was the music that played, and that was good.
Yes. So now we're in this field with Rudy Woodworth.
Rudy Woodgrowth III.
And
you named him.
And some armlets that might make people fall down.
All right. I say we... I go back in towards like and examine the foes that we were facing before.
Okay. So you kind of crawl under this yellow canvas, and you're inside the interior. It's open-topped, so the sunlight is kind of shining down, but you're situated between... two kind of empty cages. Peering between the cages, you can see kind of hordes of people that look like they're in rags, kind of tied to a large turbine kind of system. So there's not a turbine, whatever. They're spinning, they're like moving it around like cattle, kind of being whipped by demons. So the main foes you see are these three gaunt demons with these scraggly, kind of tentacly like beards, and they're whipping these people, and they seem kind of prominent. And occasionally you see kind of lurking guards of these slimy slug guys that look kind of like half human monstrosities and half slugs flesh-colored, sliding around on the ground in patrols.
All right. Sharpie, we're here to meet your dad. Is your dad gone, or is he here?
Well, he was. I mean, this is where he was. He's not around anymore.
I mean, it's Father's Day, Sharpie.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, you can't expect everything to sync up perfectly.
I don't know. Did you hear that intro?
I know. Well, maybe I could use blood magic to locate my father like I did that one time.
Yeah.
Blood magic under special abilities because I forced it with bad improv.
Yep. It works in this world.
What did I do?
You cut yourself and you meditated on the ensuing blood.
Cut. The cosmic sounds of belt whippings.
The blood, it drops to the floor and sinks into the ground, but it kind of, after sinking into the ground, it kind of comes back out and beads up and forms a kind of arrow that leads like kind of into the center of this area.
Nice.
Thank you. Happy Father's Day. I told you, the father-son bond is bigger than any system. I go on with these guys. I explain.
Okay, so I start crawling like slow and low to the ground along the direction of that arrow, and I look back and I give him that kind of Vietnam hand signal, like where you put a hand up and you wave them forward, and I point out to the foes and I said, we got three slug monsters. We got slug monsters in the wire.
Okay, that happens.
All right. So I start approaching.
But yes. Are we inside or outside this tent?
So if Quark actually came through, I'm assuming you guys did too, but maybe you didn't.
As long as it felt safe.
Yeah.
I went through.
There we go.
So are these foes, you said these foes are past foes, like we don't need to...
I don't remember saying
no,
that.
No, we saw them and never foes. Fought them. We
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, because you were gone. So you came into this tent, right?
I'm sorry. Sorry.
It's fine. I didn't even...
It's fine. So it's Father's Day. You're a daughter, maybe one day a mother. It's not... You're out of place.
No, so you went into this tent and you saw all these demons and then you left and now you're coming back.
I'm distracted by how sorry the audience felt for me in that moment. I don't understand. Anyway, sorry. Okay,
well,
got it.
I'm not explaining it twice.
No, I know.
Oh, he just hung up on you fucking father style.
This guy's got heart balls.
Yeah. Click.
Sorry. Okay, what's happening? Probably demons.
All right. How close am I to the nearest foe? The nearest judge?
So you're pretty close to like a small slithering patrol of these slug dudes. You're pretty far away from the nearest the big beardy demon. Those guys are kind of in the very center of the camp, and you're still pretty much on the periphery.
All right. Don't get mad when I ask you this. Mm-hmm. Where are we?
You're in yellow camp.
We're in the yellow camp inside the tent.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Spencer's dad, changed. how do you feel right now watching being on stage with your son?
Oh, it's awesome, especially like when he does a little smile, you know, that little kind of impish you smile wish after you... after he just dissed you, but then he smiles to let you know he's just kidding.
I mean,
now he's getting yours. Now he's...
He's giving you a frown. I've never been happier than I am.
Spencer gives daggers to his dad through his eyes
for revealing my game. He says,
"Dad, get the hell off of stage and stop embarrassing my bearded ass."
I couldn't. Not on Father's Day. I couldn't do it on Father's Day. Any other day.
So I have a plan of attack. Can I go?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, I'm putting on the armlet of autumn, which can make me invisible.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going straight for the big-ass demon in the middle. All and right. I'm going to use my poison dagger to try and put him away.
Use that poison dagger.
Now, can I ask, would that be a sneak attack?
Well, yeah, since I'm invisible, I guess it would have to be.
Yeah. Dungeon Dad snap.
There's Kool-Aid in the back. Let's all drink it and just die. And
well, let me ask you this, son. Was it a sneak attack when I drove you to McDonald's to meet your friends and you made me drop you off two blocks away?
I've never done that, right?
Why couldn't you be invisible, Dad? Son, your words are like a poison dagger sometimes. You don't realize how bad they can wound. You just dealt 6 hit points to my
feelings. What is your father-son bonding activity? Like, do you have something that you guys enjoy doing together? Like, fishing or... I know you guys don't play D&D together. Like, what? Like, historically...
They just watch Gossip Girl.
Well, I mean, is there a show that you guys watch together?
No,
or is there like a...
No.
Sometimes I might, when he was home and he was watching Adventure Time, I might sit down with him and enjoy Jake and Finn.
He didn't really like it very much.
Spencer, your dad loves you. Let him in.
No.
No dice.
This is a source of pain. I don't know why all you are laughing.
Because it's not us.
Oh, my gosh. Oh. What I wouldn't give for a dad that would come to a show that I did. My dad asks me routinely, how is your internet talk going? How is your
Yeah, but you don't want him listening.
No, I certainly don't. No.
Yeah,
this
exactly.
This is great. Well, maybe you guys should, model trains or like there's got to be something.
You guys ever go out in the backyard, fire up the grill? No.
I built him a dice tower once for D&D.
We built it together.
Yeah. Well.
Oh, well, that's a thing. That's not
something we do. That's one thing we did.
But let me in, son.
My heart is like a cold dungeon. I don't know.
Talk it out the only way you know, Spencer.
Examining my personal feelings as well as past events. I don't know.
Andy, are you and Spencer's mom experiencing any sort of empty nest syndrome following Spencer?
She is. She is.
Yeah.
Yeah. But she follows.
Is she making you wear a beard?
No, she'd like for me to grow my mustache back, but I got too many bum chicka bum bows. So I just won't do that anymore.
I keep seeing glimmers of your sexuality, and it's really...
It's horrifying, I know.
No. And glimmers of Spencer's dad's sexuality is the name of my book.
All right, so
my dad one night agreed to build a robot with me. And for the rest of my life, there was this half-built robot in the basement.
Metaphor.
And you're like, Dad, can we finish this metaphor, please? Not building this.
And he's like, the fact that it will never be finished is the complete metaphor.
All right, so Andy, as Chris DeBerg, has just sneak attacked invisibly into the yellow camp.
Yeah, that happened. Anyway, so yeah, you creep in unseen up on this demon dude, you know, straight up, and you roll your attack, which I already rolled... like 5 minutes ago, and you strike as you do,
as you've done so many times.
Why am I here? Please let me out. Please release me.
Dealing 24 damage.
Damn. Holy shit! He really is Spencer's dad. Yeah.
Unfortunately, demons are immune to poison.
Wow. Right,
I'll give him that.
Yeah, so that happened.
Spencer, before this is over, I want you both to roll a hug check.
Save versus bonding.
I mean, my dream would be for Spencer and Andy to switch places and...
For his dad to Dungeon Master?
That wouldn't work. I don't get it.
This is so fascinating.
I really have never been happier. I love your dad more than I love anyone in my family. I through my armlet of summer,
okay,
I have acquired fiery arrows.
Yeah, that's true.
I fire a single good fiery arrow at the enemy.
Okay. So
she has a +7 on adjectives for her arrows.
Just I should remind you, if you wreathe yourselves in the trappings of your fiery armor that grants your arrows flamingness, that would give away your position. Either way, I mean, you could still do it, but I should warn you.
Well, can I? Well, I have a sack and some. Oh.
Now, is that sack made of asbestos?
Thank you, Jerky Bill.
How about Cool Rock Bill these days?
It's Rock Bill?
Cool Rock Bill. All
right, are you
cool
referring to his like satiny shirt?
I'm just trying to go with New Bill.
I think it's open mic jazz night. Bill.
No, he gave cool rocks shirt to people, you guys.
Yes,
do you not remember this?
Yes. I'm Bill's biggest advocate.
Me too. Yeah, Bill.
He brought rocks to your birthday?
My birthday last night. Yes. Oh, yeah.
He gave rocks to people in the audience today.
Bill didn't give me rocks.
Yeah. It's this whole thing.
Beef Jerky Bill's gonna just spend some more rocks while this game happens, everybody. If you podcast listeners hear a strange jingle jangle of this, of stones slapping together gently, like ripples to a stream. Beef Jerky Bill's wearing what can only be described as Neil Diamond's last tour shirt. It's a kind of a dark brown coppery satin affair with some nice cufflinks. I really like that, Bill.
It's definitely like an 8,000 thread count shirt.
Yeah. I like this. And he's sifting to the crowd with a giant Ziploc baggie full of stones.
I don't want to encourage too big of a tangent, but what's the deal with the stones? What's the story?
It's this whole thing.
Normally a guy in Hollywood in a satin shirt walking around slinging rock is a whole different thing.
I really wish there was someone here to rival Stone Beef Jerky Bill named like Sand Andrew, who just started handing
out. Wouldn't it be amazing if Beef Jerky Bill's dad was here and he just had a bag of like I don't know like model trains or just like.
Can we
like,
make next week just arbitrary specific gift night where everybody brings the crowd as some like. It's just like a big show and tell.
We have a pageant of gifts.
Yeah, we'll do a little show and tell, and everybody has to bring treats. Yeah,
we'll do an episode where the theme is derailment, so that the show is not derailed.
So I don't want to.
Thank you, Bill.
I don't want to give away my position. So with my sack and my bedroll.
Uh-huh. Both flammable. Just saying.
You're gonna launch an attack on demons with a sack and a sleeping bag?
I'd like to be clear that I'm not doing a bit, and this is how I like to play. Dan, we play a
you're
private...
You're gonna get us killed out here.
We play a private D&D game.
You can't just throw we play a private D&D game, and we were trying to get 50 pounds of copper out of a mine, and Erin pipes in and goes, and she plays an older gentleman who's a bard, and she put forth the concept of taking the cheese that she has and melting it so we could slide the copper out of the mine.
And it's, yeah.
It's not that crazy. She was greasing the bottom of the sack.
Thank you.
How much cheese did she carry?
I had to explain like carrying capacity to everyone, and then we were like, oh, everyone can carry all the copper. It's fine. All
right.
Right, but I still wanted to slide my copper. Anyway, after that night, Dan had a very serious talk with me, which was, do you care about this game? Are you taking it seriously? And I'm like,
You're like... You're making it sound like I was yelled at you after everyone left for the melted cheese.
And then
cheese.
He hit me. With his bag of holding.
It's the fact that 90% of the time, like, you put a beard on when everyone's coming over. You put snacks out. You do everything. Like, you host this party. Everyone comes over and plays D&D. But then you also, throughout the night, you're like... It seems like you're barely focused on the game and that you're not enjoying it. And I was saying to you that night, it was like, it seems like you're not enjoying it. Like I think if you sit in a chair and focus on the game, it's like and you were like, I just wanted to melt cheese and the thing. I was like, I'm not yelling at you about the fucking cheese thing.
I love what a sassy neighborhood kid I am. I think I have, in the same way that you say that you have Asperger's, I have adult ADHD, and it's a serious thing.
I'm just wondering if sliding your copper is some kind of sexual euphemism.
I'm not going to sleep with you, Spencer's dad. I have a boyfriend and you have a wife.
It would get so complicated. Does ADHD stand for always Dan Harmon defying?
Devoted.
Well, Dan is right. I could be more focused during D&D. I just, you know,
you're not paying attention a hell of a lot during that game. You're
and then kinda, there's a syndrome kinda... where if you don't pay enough attention during D&D, then what happens? Then it all becomes, I mean, it's hard. It's like then you come sit down and it's like you need to get immersed in the game,
she's
baby.
Doing it for you.
Shut up, lady. Yes, she makes. She puts out a plate of baby carrots. She sharpens pencils. I'm no stranger to the sacrifices she's making. But I want her. I would give all that up for her to have a good time. I want her to enjoy herself during the game, because I would rather just go. Let's just go to the Roosevelt Hotel and rent a bungalow. Let's go to the fucking Chateau Marmont and do a big bag of coke and play Dungeons and Dragons. Like, have people bring shit to us. Like, let me die that way, and let there be black and white autopsy photos of me with a die in my fist.
after that conversation, I realized that I was being distracting to other people because I was distracted. But I wasn't unhappy.
Especially me, though, because I'm your boyfriend. I don't think anyone else cares that much. I don't know,
It does come off to me that you don't really enjoy playing the actual game.
Like, really?
The game is not something that you particularly are invested in.
Right. No, I do have a good time. I get distracted by hosting, which I really enjoy. I really like putting out snacks, and
the snacks are out.
No, I know, but like, I mean, I don't know.
And
you don't have this chip in your brain that gives you joy when you're taking care of people, and I get distracted by that, and I get distracted by people being hungry, and then I also get distracted by being drunk and being like, I've got an idea. What if a puppy was a therapist? I should think about this for a while. That's an actual like note in my phone that I saw tonight that I was writing during D&D. I was like, yeah, like a puppy should be a therapist. Like, what if, I mean.
Yeah, but meanwhile, we're getting our asses slashed to pieces by hobgoblins and shit. And like, you're, you know.
Well, to be fair, in the first couple of games when I suggested, when I was really invested and I suggested things that I was taking very seriously, you shut me down. And I felt, no, please don't do that. That makes me want to kill myself.
How did I shut you down?
don't, no, I'm fine. When we were talking, this is getting very specific and Pittsburgh-y, but I, when we were this, okay, well, I'm glad we're talking about this. It's not a big deal, but when we were giving our personal bios of our characters, and I know what you're going to say after I say this, but I was.
I want to hear that too.
I was giving the bio of my character Mordecai Stumpgarden, who I was really excited to play, and in the middle of me explaining my origin story, in which I said, because I wanted to have a connection with you in this story, I said, well, and I think that you know, because we're both this is getting real deep.
We're both
halflings in the thing, right. So I suggested, I said, well, and my character and Jeff's character, we have like a secret connection. And then I continued to explain my story. And then in the middle of it, Jeff was like, are you done? Is that it? And I was like,
That's not what happened. That's absolutely not what happened.
Well, it was something that's adjacent to all your are you done? You know what I'm talking about, though.
Yeah, you said we have a secret connection. We have a mysterious past together. I was like I didn't know what my character was. We just picked our character. I didn't know what, right. I didn't know who I was. I was like. Like what? Like I have no idea what you're talking about.
I threw it out there. I didn't know what it was.
I didn't know. I was unable to yes and that because I didn't know what my fucking character
was. And then you
was.
Told me to stop explaining my character.
And then I told you to go fuck yourself and I kicked you in the dick and took your wallet. Oh, God, I'm sorry. I was a terrible person then.
No. You're not.
I'm
a
sorry
person.
If I felt. I'm sorry if you felt shut off by that. I didn't. That was not my intention.
It's
I didn't know.
A,
you,
it's really
I didn't
not
know
a big
what,
deal.
You were,
it's,
you
and
were
it's
offering
not like
something,
a last...
and I didn't know. I didn't know how to further that. I didn't know what the. I didn't know what was going on.
This is by. This is in reference to a Dungeons and Dragons game to which you guys are not invited. And, and meanwhile,
so much more interesting now.
I mean, you have been totally delightful during Dungeons and Dragons. I feel. I mean, it's more about me. Like I think maybe I'm an idiot, but like my ideas are like I want to make contraptions out of the things that I have on my list, and I want to put cheese on bags, and maybe it's stupid, but like in the middle of my description, like it was made known to me that it was silly and a little too out there, and I think, I mean, I'm the lowest common denominator, so
to what
to well. I have a really good time during Dungeons and
Dragons. Well, I don't think that's fair. First of all, if you want your role to be, if what you delight in is saying, okay, I have a sack in my inventory and I have an eagle in my inventory, I want to put the sack over the eagle and turn it into an eagle sack and use that to think. People around you have a right to look at you with their mouth open.
Totally, they do.
That's part of our enjoyment of it. Like for if you okay. look around
well,
the
no,
room,
I, like,
you no one's going to be looking at you with their hand on their chin, going like, "Go on."
It's
like working with Nikola Tesla.
No, I don't care about that. I really don't care about that. The thing that makes me like kind of shut up a little bit is that my worst nightmare is that. It feels like I'm saying those things during our D&D game because I'm like, well, fuck it, I'll just do whatever. But really, I'm just like, I'm putting all of my little brain cells into one little package.
Yeah, but you frequently, like, and it's not all the time, but just there's been times when you're so up and down, you're in the kitchen, you're there. And as we're going around or we'll be in a combat thing, and everyone's like, kind of has to be aware of who's where and who's holding what and what's going on. And then it comes back to you, and it's kind of it'll be a reset because somebody's not in the room like that. Like even if I get up for a second to go make a drink, you come back in, you've missed stuff, you know.
Yeah, so, yeah, yeah. So you're totally right. I'm sorry. In the conversation,
you keep dropping your goddamn character sheets all over the place.
I just love feeling like a queen. Pick it up, Spencer's dad. I'm a queen. Thank you. Woo!
All right, come on.
All right, so you fire an arrow at the demon.
She shoots a fucking arrow. What's
everyone dies.
Oh, shit.
No.
Happy Father's Day to me.
No, wait, what were you going to do with the sack? You brought the sack out for a reason, right?
Oh. Well, okay. So I'm I want to take the sack out on the bedroll out because I want to make a mooring dummy that's in the
So you're saying this sack is as big as Spencer's sack.
I'm not going to sleep with you, Spencer's sack.
No matter how many times you pick up those character sheets, it's not going to happen.
Well, you're right. I am very distracted during your game, and I'll try to be less distracted. So I'm going
We just want you to have fun. We want everyone there to be enjoying the game itself.
Totally.
I think the audience wants to be enjoying the game itself.
We're loving it.
Fair enough.
Look, they got rocks.
Yeah, usually when they come here and put their $10 down, what do they get? Jonah Ray talking about eating pussy. I don't know. Tonight they got a rock.
That's not fair, Hugh.
They saw you cry. Yeah.
Yeah, I cried about my dad. You got a rock. Fuck you guys.
All right, let's
let's at least
talk shit about community.
Let's at least earn one experience point in this fucking campaign.
You said that if I shot my fiery arrow, I would give away my position. So this is my plan. I would like to put my bedroll inside my sack.
I'm not going to sleep with you, Aaron.
I put my bedroll in my sack, and I put it in the corner of the room. What is the shape of the room? Is it an octagon?
It's like a pentagon.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So I put it in one corner of this pentagon shape, mm-hmm. and I would like to... I take some of my hair, and I put it...
How do you do that?
I pull it out of my head because I'm a fucking badass, and I don't give a shit. These Liberty Spikes, Adam.
You cut your hair. You have your hair. You're welcome.
Oh boy. All right, so I
Adam, we are Goldberging ourselves tonight. We don't.
This is self Goldbergian.
You are alive and well on
this Goldberg show. Pre Goldberg. It's like acid wash jeans. We don't need to.
I happen to have, as everyone knows, I have a scarf around my waist that is the same color as my hair, and I take it off and I throw it on top of this this bed sack inside this bedroll inside the sack. And everyone knows that I'm fast as light. I fire my arrow and I run away. Like I fire it in front of my dummy. And then I run to another corner and I'm able to, I shape myself into like a slug shape. Wait. And I.
Let me see your character sheet. That's not on there. That's not on there.
As a humanoid creature, I can like just shape my body. So I just like, I'm a slug, and I kind of spit up on my chin, and I'm like, what's happening?
You realize you're going to get us all killed again.
I don't know. They might feel sorry for us.
At least melt the cheese so we can eat.
They might just put money at our feet and leave.
So, what do I roll?
Let's keep it going.
Okay.
All right, so she does all that.
So she makes a
dummy. There's an Eric Clapton song playing whilst we watch her do all that.
Okay.
It's in the way that you stuff a pillow into a bedroll and put a wig on it and then curl up into a fetal position and spit on yourself.
To start, I rolled a 5, a 4, and a 5. So let that frame the results. Cobbling together a quick makeshift mannequin in an attempt to disguise attention from yourself, you swiftly put it into position before loosing an arrow from your bow. After that, you run and attempt to disguise yourself like a slug person.
A humanic slug.
Humanic slug.
Your arrow goes wide, plummeting to the ground as if it were dropped. You take off down the hall, you just take off down the whatever. And you get to your destination where you contort yourself into a slug. You're right near, kind of a detachment of slugs moving by as if you're trying to blend in with them.
I'm starting to realize this is not a good idea.
You're starting to realize that?
What's this being told back?
When you hear it back, it sounds weird, right?
Well, when you say it.
It wasn't that finely honed gem that you thought it was.
Master is Ricky Ricardo.
I don't want to blow anyone's mind, but I'm starting to realize I don't think I'm very good at Dungeons and Dragons.
There's better tools for the ploys you're trying to pull. It's not always a bag and a bedroll. Sometimes there's
magical
person, pigments.
Magical
or,
pigments.
Yeah, major creation involved. Who knows? You know, that's deep stuff.
So what happened? Everyone believed
that
I killed the enemy?
The makeshift mannequin falls apart, like it topples to pieces because it's two things arranged near each other.
But you understand, like logically it just has to be like a distraction. Like where is this coming from? And then this is a magical world where maybe a bedroll is shooting arrows. Who knows? Right? Like you'd be like, oh, the bedroll people are here.
But if you roll low, that entails you do a poor job, and your effect isn't as grand as you'd hoped.
This is a
sack placed atop a bedroll.
Aaron, can we all get together one night and play D&D your way?
But I would love it. As an experiment, he play Mulrain and could I?
We'll make cakes and there'll be baby carrots and we'll all do this stuff, but we also have to do peyote.
And there's no actual combat allowed. You get punished if you just take out a sword and hit a motherfucker. Everything has to be played as if you're playing a 1995 DreamWorks Interactive video game. I used the rake to find the wallet.
Really, that made my heart so full. I hope you're not joking.
No, I'd love to. I actually would.
DreamWorks did some great video games in the 90s.
All right, Spencer's dad, because it's Father's Day and the show's getting we're getting toward that bewitching hour right now. Why don't you fire one parting shot for fathers around the world?
All right. Well, I'm going to fire two blinding bombs.
A load, if you will.
Yes.
In proper father fashion, he's going to fire two blinding bombs and blame one on the dog.
Yeah. I mean, technically speaking, it's not your turn.
Spencer, roll for a hug right now. Roll for a father hug.
Don't tell him what to do.
I'm going to roll for a hug, and let's see like what it actually comes up with.
Is it you hugging your dad, or your dad hugging you?
The die result will determine that.
Okay.
Trust me. That's a 15.
That's a hit.
That's a solid hit.
So who hugs whom?
Wrapping his arms around his butt.
You can just narrate it.
I'm not going to really do it.
Finish it.
I don't know. Oh, what? Finish what? At the end of Harmontown, they sit staring in stunned silence, hoping that father and son will interact. Their hopes were for nothing. Hey, that's me. That's who I am.
Thank you for coming to Harmontown, everybody. We wouldn't want you any other way, Spencer. We love you. Let's hear it for Andy, Spencer's father.
Spencer's dad. Thank you, sir. Thanks for coming.
Hug, 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 hug,
hug, hug, hug, hug, hug, hug. Yeah!
Thank you once again. Thank you, Aaron McGathy. We have a special D&D date done Aaron McGathy style.
I think the takeaway is be a father to everyone around you. Don't anticipate anything from them. Your son will be whatever kind of son he wishes to be. But if he's your son, you should be proud of him. I thought I could riff it.
Dan Harmon, everybody.
Dad.
I love you, Dad.